Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. We ended the last show talking a little bit about the NFL protests, or a lot about the NFL protests and the related issues. And there's a lot left to be said.
Right. So I think there's, you know, and this is why, you know, it's frustrated the way we ended the last show, just because we left so much open-ended. I think it's such a loaded topic, and there's a lot to dissect. There's a lot to break down. I think, you know, I got into, if I were Roger Goodell, this is what I would do. I would have never, in 2009, taken the money from the Department of Defense because of the optics, which I think as the commissioner of the NFL, you have to look at it, right? You're being paid by the Department of Defense to celebrate essentially the Department of Defense. If you just break it down into basic economics and then the whole idea of PR, that doesn't look good. It doesn't. There's no way that you could spin it where it does make sense, right?
Well, to me, you said the words NFL and not accepting money. And I don't know if those have ever been
well, and that's clashed. It was greed, and the NFL's greed.
But and
it caught
and
up with them.
But there's a patriotism thing too, right? In small town
listen,
America.
Listen, that's fine. Like, you don't have to think about it. You said it yourself. Best national anthem you've ever heard.
Super Bowl 25, Whitney Houston, Bills, Giants.
Absolutely. Right? Very patriotic
war going
moment.
On in
war
Iraq.
Going on, patriotic moment. People still to this day, I hear that. It gives me chills. You know, it makes you want to stand up and grab the flag and drape yourself in it and cut yourself open to show you bleed red, white, and blue. Right? All right. Sung by an African American woman.
Both
you
teams
know,
whose colors were red, white, and blue.
Right. Like, I mean, everything great about America was in that moment.
Except Bill Belichick. He's anti-American. He hates America and he hates
stop,
babies.
Stop,
and, all right, that's bitterness.
Stop. So in that moment, right, we agree. Best national anthem we've ever heard. It was a great moment on film, everything. And when you go back and watch it, not a single player. You don't see a single player in the shot because they weren't on the field. They were in the locker room or in the tunnel.
Right.
Right. You didn't see one. Right. Like, so
this
don't give
19...
me the 91. Right, it was 1991. Like you, there was not a like. You can go back. You can watch it on YouTube. Right, there's some people who probably still have it recorded. Depending on like, chances are, if you're a fan of either one of those teams, I'm sure there's someone who has it recorded on VHS. You can go back and watch it. There were no players on the sideline. Those guys were all in the fucking locker room. So don't tell me that if they're on the field, that makes it more patriotic. No, it doesn't. Right, like some of the most patriotic moments. You remember after 9/11 happened, they still weren't on the field. Right after 9/11 happened, you had the national anthem song, you had the flag ceremony, Jets fly over, and then it was in New York, the New York Jets, the offensive lineman, I think his last name was Rizzi or Rizzo or something like that, I can't remember now, because that was, you know, however many years, 16 years ago, but, you know, after the national anthem is played, you know, the Jets come flying out of the locker room, and you had the fireman guy banging his helmet on the side of the thing, and then you had the player running out of the tunnel with the flag after the national anthem. One of the most patriotic moments in sports history. So don't tell me that the players have to be on the sideline to make it more patriotic, right? Like, actually, I disagree. I think the fact that those guys coming out after sort of, you know, yay, team, yay, America,
right.
here we are. Right, like that sells it just as much as those guys standing there. You know, some of them not as interested as others. Like, come on. So, I think as a commissioner, the move would have been 2009, not having the guys come out on the field, not accepting the money because the optics were bad then. The optics were bad then. You know why we know the optics were bad? Because no one knew that the Department of Defense was paying the NFL. They didn't announce the partnership. They didn't announce that, hey, we're going to pay them to celebrate us, right? Them and us being the Department of Defense, right? The Department of Defense, right, and the Army and the Coast Guard and the Air Force and the Navy, they didn't come out and announce this new partnership where they were going to pay money to the NFL for the NFL to celebrate all the different military branches, right? There's a reason why they never came out with that announcement. There's a reason why there wasn't a big press conference, because they knew it would look bad. So if you knew then enough to not make a big deal about it from a marketing standpoint, then you knew that it looked bad. So I can say that I don't think that's a 2020 thing. That was a greed thing on the side of the NFL. The NFL wanted the extra money. Why? I don't know.
Yes, you do.
It doesn't even make any sense. $13 million. They just paid Roger Goodell $60 million. You know? I mean, like, come on.
Fair enough. When you talk numbers, when you say you don't know why the NFL wanted the extra money, the NFL has never said no to a dollar.
And that's that goes back to my point where their greed,
small picture, big picture.
Their greed caught up to them on this day, right? Because now the NFL doesn't know what to do, because this isn't about to the NFL and to the people on the left, you know, Black Lives Matter supporters, black people, everybody who's boycotting the NFL because Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job. Like, really, that's the reason why you're going to boycott the NFL? Okay, fine. But for all those people, when you look at what's happening right now, right, where Roger Goodell is sitting there like, is the president really going to tell me how to run my are you? Jerry Jones is sitting there. Are you who the fuck? You mother, right?
Robert Kraft was the best one, by the way.
Right. Robert Kraft was like, I gave you how much money?
I kissed your ass.
Right. You think you're going to tell me how I'm, right? So you have that. All right.
So can I back that whole thing up, though? Because when Trump made that statement that caused this whole avalanche, he was in Alabama, essentially on another one of his extended campaign rallies, right? I want to go in front of a group of people who I know what I can say to make them glorify me. And he knew in a place with no professional football team, where football is huge,
football is life.
I will then say, and wouldn't you love to tell these sons of bitches, you need to be, you know, kissing the flag because you're making all this money. Wouldn't you like to be saying you're fired because you watch? I mean, it was a fucking campaign rally moment.
Well, in Alabama. I mean,
he's
everybody in Alabama. Like, a majority of the state is dead broke, right? I mean,
I'm just saying that.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
it was a campaign rally moment, and it just blew up into this. And then
campaign rally moment, playing to the people who are broke, and by playing to them, he's going to say, "Look, all these rich black guys are out here protesting. You're just a white struggling guy. Look, that ain't right." And then that he's got the nerve to get on a knee in front of the flag. We should fire his ass.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't.
I don't think it gets said enough, because it was this whole thing. If Trump had his way, this would not have been broadcast. He was looking for a moment of applause, and it blew up into this, and then it avalanched into, really, okay, whether it was Jerry Jones or Robert Kraft McCoy. Or,
well, it wasn't so much the player. I mean, the players' reactions were the players' reactions. But the owners' reactions, like, and that's where now the people on the left are kind of caught, right? Because now they're pissed because, you know, the owners are saying that the owners are kneeling and the owners are locking arms with the players, not because they're worried about social injustice, but because they're not going to be told what to do, how to run their teams, how to run their league by Donald Trump, a guy who couldn't get into their league. You're not going to tell us how to do shit, right? That's what Jerry Jones is saying. That's what Robert Kraft is saying. Now, the owner of the Jaguars, I think, I want to say Amir Khan.
No, damn it. No, that would be British boxer.
That's a boxer. Damn it.
I fucked up a name in the last time. Yeah, payback.
I knew it was wrong as it was coming out of my mouth.
Amir Khan.
He was the first one because they played in London, so that game was on at 9:30, which screwed up our FanDuel thing, by the way. He was the first one.
You get so mad at me for segues when you do that shit.
Cool. I'm sorry. That's hypocritical of me. Anyway, point being, but Khan was the first one because the team played in London, and that game was at 9:30, so he locks arms. He's on the field locking arms with his players, with the Jacksonville Jaguars, as they either lock arms or they kneel during the national anthem in a show of solidarity with either Colin Kaepernick or just about social injustice. And that's my other issue with this, is that now the message is being distorted. because there's an obvious beef between the owners and the president, where the owners are saying, you're not going to tell us what to do. And the president's saying, hey, you need to fire those guys, or those guys need to be off the field. And then there's the players who are kneeling in support of their owners or in spite of Donald Trump. And then those are the ones that are kneeling for social justice, for the end of racism, for the end of police brutality. And now the message is distorted. And that's one of the biggest issues that kind of, I think, in my opinion, impacts civil rights, impacts social justice, is that there are so many different varying messages that are so distorted, that get so spread out. Everybody has their own individual cause that they can't come together, and they don't actually end up achieving what they're looking to achieve because of the way that they're divided, right? And now, so that makes it easy for the other side to gang up against them, right? Like, so now, you know, if you're a conservative on the right, it's easy to look at those guys and join around one thing, which is what?
They make all this money. How can they be?
It's just you're disrespecting the flag.
Right.
Okay. Right. Because it's easy for police and soldiers and firemen and everybody in New York who said, oh, all the firefighters who died during 9/11 and now military and
if you've ever had the president
and everyone. So everyone's saying you're disrespecting the flag. And by disrespecting the flag, you're disrespecting all these groups of people. Right. It's one thing that you can get around. And so now you have a giant wall of people who are all saying the flag, and it represents this and that, but it's all the
military and the country and your safety and everything else. Sacrifice.
But it all kind of comes down to the flag and the national anthem, right? That's the meat of their disgust with this whole thing, right? But if you get on the ground and you talk to the people who are kneeling, right, it's the president said this, and it's social injustice, and it's racism, it's all that sort of stuff, and they can't bring it all together, so it's not a fair fight because the right has divided and they have conquered, right?
And so many of the people that are taking these stances are taking it based on what they're hearing in the Breitbart, Fox News.
Emotion. Reaction. Yeah,
yes.
Like it's not based on actual experience. It's not based on fact and truth. It's just based on emotion and just that sort of kind of raw, reptilian thought process that people have of, you know, it's God,
they
country,
me,
family,
yes.
Period.
Yeah.
And to a certain degree, listen, you know, I went to school on the East Coast, UMass, Amherst.
Right.
And the thing about that is a lot of black people on the East Coast can trace their roots back to the West Indies, the Caribbean, South America, Cape Verde, different places in Africa, for different reasons, right? They can trace their roots very, very far back. So me going there, just a kid that was born in Texas that ended up being raised in the Midwest, you asked me to trace my roots, I can go back to Louisiana. As far back as I can go, Louisiana and parts of Texas, that's it. I can't go any further back. So when they asked me where I'm from, just like Ohio, they're like, no, like where, like your family, where's your family from? Texas and Louisiana, right? No. Like, what island? What country? Like, what part of Africa? What part of, you know, South America? Like, I don't fucking know. Like, literally,
right.
Like, I mean, like, I can only go as far back as Louisiana, Texas, right? And we've talked about this on the show. So, but the thing is, in college, that was held against me a little bit. It's just like, well, so you're not Jamaican. You're not, you know, you don't have any Dominican roots. You don't have any. You're not from Ghana. Like, you don't have like anything. How, then you can't be one of us. Like, whoa, what the fuck? Why? You're not from, you know, one of the islands. You don't have, like, you can't, you know, like, you know, this all started because, you know, they said, hey, you know, bring the flag of your country and your home. All right, well, how about the American flag? Where else? What other flag can I bring? There's only one flag I can bring. Right? That's all I know. Right? Like, I can dig as deep as I want to dig, but I can't go any further back. So, but my whole point with that is that for me, the U.S. is it. That's it. That's all that I have. This country is mine. That's all that I have. So I support it. I love it. I want to see it better. I recognize that it's flawed, but I recognize the greatness that is the United States of America, right? And so I have to embrace it, but I want it to be better. So I'm by saying, like, look, these are the issues. It's all out there. I'm putting it there. And I'm not the only one. There's a lot of guys in the NFL just like me. who feel the same way. Like, listen, this country is great. It has afforded us a great number of opportunities, but there's a lot of shit about it that kind of fucking sucks, and we need to fix it. And if you won't listen to us any other way, we can't protest in the streets, you get pissed, right?
Right. Oh,
you don't. Right. You don't.
But your posture during a song is
apparently lights the fucking world on fire.
Is shitting on anyone who's ever done anything for you. All right, so I've got a few things I want to ask you about. Sorry if I'm ambushing you a little bit, but there were a lot of things on Facebook this week. I saw a few in particular, and I wish I could find them. I tried to earlier, and I didn't, where it was a black guy talking about the anthem protests and basically saying, you know, this is your fault, black people. You need to focus on black violence. You need to focus on this. You need to, the one guy said, you know, when I wish Steve, I looked for this and I
couldn't find it.
Yeah. I couldn't find it, but he literally was basically saying, you know, I'm a black guy in America and I want to say, if you just act with respect, you can do this, you can do this, and this is bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And I've been pulled over and I acted with respect and I was pulled over at gunpoint and I wanted to go, time the fuck out. You just acknowledged you got pulled over and had a gun drawn on you for a fucking traffic stop. And you were saying, I stuck my hands out the window and I did this and this. Yeah, good. You did the right things. You didn't get shot. You're bragging about not getting shot. Great, dude. I've been pulled over at traffic stops. I never had to stick my hands out the fucking window. I had a gun stuck in my fucking face.
When the highlight of your story is, and I didn't get shot. <That's>, see?
But, I mean, so where do you come out on that? Because I did my white guy thing and said, you just proved a point that people are protesting. You just said you did these things and I did them right, so I didn't get shot. Yeah, great. But if I had been pulled over in that exact same situation, I would not have had to do the same thing.
I mean, where I come out on it is where we kind of ended the show last time. Just like I can tell you about my experiences, right? My experiences with my friends that were white, that were right next to me doing the same shit that I was doing. They're arrested, or I was arrested, they were not. Or I'm driving down the street, not doing anything. I get pulled over for not having a front license plate. And officer comes up to me, hand on his gun. I end up in the back of the police car, handcuffed. I didn't say anything. I wasn't a smart ass. I just like, he asked me if I knew why I pulled him over. I said, no, I have no idea. I'm sorry. Can you please tell me? And the next thing I know, he's asking me to get out of the car, puts me up against the car, pats me down, says he's doing this for his safety and my safety, puts me then in handcuffs, and then puts me in the back of the car. And I say, I know my rights. You're literally violating him up and down. He says, you know, like, you're not a lawyer. You're not going to tell me. I said, I am.
Actually, I am.
All right. And then he ignores me and proceeds to, you know, like, search my truck and everything else. And then runs my plate or my license or whatever and says, okay, you're free to go. Gets me and kind of gives me a pat on the head and have a nice day. So, you know, what I say to the guy who says, you know, if you just say yes, sir, no, sir, and you just do what you're told, then it's all right. And you don't have to worry about no nothing. Like, that's actually not true. Because I do.
Well, but the thing I want to point out was this guy acknowledges having a fucking gun pointed at him. So he should be.
Right. But Jim, I mean, like, that's what's tripping you up. I can't get tripped up on that. Right. Because, I mean, like, I'm sorry that he's not self-aware. That's on fucking him.
Okay.
You know, I mean, like, that at the end of the day, that's on fucking him for not being fucking self-aware of what's happening to him at the moment. You know, the fact that he can just look over and not even realize, like, listen, people are protesting for you. People are saying, like, hey, what happened to you isn't right. And if you can't see it and you don't know it, I can't do shit for you. So my opinion on it is I feel sorry for that guy. You know, I feel sorry for him because he's the type of guy who thinks that he's above those other field niggas out there. He feels that he has done something or done enough to be perceived at a higher level than everybody else. Jay-Z's song, OJ, the OJ story.
Server, yeah.
We're all fucking niggas to y'all, right? That's at the end of the day, We're all the same level of nigga. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter if you're OJ or Jay-Z or Oprah or Barack or Steve or Tom or Dave. It doesn't matter. We're all the same level of nigga. So it doesn't fucking matter if you yes sir or no sir or if you're black power or if you're just, I'm just not going to say anything. It doesn't fucking matter. So you do what you can. Right? You affect what you can affect. And if you honestly believe that you sitting there saying yes, sir, no, sir, and following all the rules and doing everything right is somehow going to benefit you, which, you know, it'll probably keep you out of trouble. You're probably right. It'll probably keep you from,
happening, it's the right move, right, but you shouldn't be in that situation.
Exactly. And the whole point is that the crazy thing is that you can sit there and think that you following all the rules and saying and being polite and being respectful is enough. But we've seen enough cases where it's not enough. And that's what we're protesting, the cases where it's not enough.
But Steve, not to discredit what you're saying, but I'll say it shouldn't be acceptable that that's the case, right? I mean, look, I've had a gun pointed at me on a few occasions in my life, never by a police officer, didn't like it. I have, three.
What you doing, Jim?
I was in fourth grade for one of them.
Buffalo.
Yeah, fucking Doug Babcock, fuck you. Yeah, I said his name. Fuck him. He's probably in. Right, anyway. But I mean, literally, it's.
If you know Doug Babcock, go fuck him up.
Babcock, fuck him. Oh, no. Just find out where he is, and I'll do it, prick. But this went downhill in a fucking hurry. Anywho, it's terrifying when you're looking down the barrel of a gun. It's terrifying. And when it's at the hands of someone who has some, you know, concept of legal authority, then it's more scary, especially when you know that an officer killed so-and-so and they walked away. So I'm looking down the gun of a barrel of a cop, and if he pulls the trigger, no one's going to say boo. I mean, if I'm lucky, there's a trial.
You know,
and I don't want to go down the road, but it's, well, that's, I mean, part of it, right?
That's a big part of it, right? It's the part where, because a lot of people like to go to the statistics,
right? Right.
They love to go to the statistics. Right. So it's the conservatives. Conservatives love the statistics.
When they
they're like, oh, them, well, yes. Black on black crime, 80% of black people are killed by black people.
Which,
well, actually, true. The actual number is 89% of black people that are murdered by black people.
Okay.
But,
okay,
Jim,
wrong word.
But Jim,
yes,
here's
sir?
A crazy thing. Do you know the percentage of white people that are murdered by white people?
I'm going to guess 88%.
It's 82%.
Oh, 82.
So 82% of people, 82% of white people that are murdered by white people.
White on white crime.
Oh, my God.
Not a problem.
Right? I mean, it's just, it's proportional. Ultimately,
right, of course.
Like, I mean, you're murdered by who you know. Now, this is the skewed number. The skewed number is, you know, like, well, theoretically, then those numbers should be equivalent, right? It's 89 black on black and 82 white on white. It should be 89 and 89, right? Like, so now it's actually the percentage of white people that are killed by black people is therefore, I don't know, like
7%.
Like 7 to 9% or something like that. And that's where people lose their minds and say, see, because black people are only 13% of the population. And so therein lies the problem, right? And so it gets fucked up and convoluted because if you think about it, though, yes, black people are 13% of the population, but not 100% of us are fucking murderers and rapists and criminals, right? It's actually a very small – when you look at the total number of murders – total number of murders per year, you're looking at about 16,000, right? There's about 16,000 murders per year in the United States. There's 300 million people in this fucking country, right? And there's 16,000 murders. So it's a very small percentage of those instances of that are happening. There's more crime, but murders, right? Because that's the number that everyone's to use because apparently black men are this murdering band of psychopaths. But there's only 16,000 out of 300 million people.
Right.
Right. And then
30 right. Whatever
so
million
then,
are black.
So then of the 16,000, then but, and you divide it, so that means there's like 9,000 white people being killed, and of the 9,000 white people being killed, 9% of those people are killed by black people. So, like, if you do the math, we're talking about a literally a minutia of the population that are sociopathic criminals.
But let me change gears on you a little bit and say, I've seen the guy who I was bitching about on Facebook also said, why aren't you protesting black on black crime? You can't protest criminals.
Right.
You can't protest.
Well, actually, that's not true.
Okay. Well, Let me try to restate it. You cannot protest non-organized criminality. You know,
You're going down a different. Like, here's the thing. I get what you're saying, but the rebuttal to you is, yeah, you can, because black people do it all the time. Listen, there are neighborhoods riddled with crime, with gang violence, yes, with drugs. And in those neighborhoods, the people, the good law-abiding citizens, don't want that criminality there. And they protest it. They march. And they get together with churches. And they try to get the news, yes, attention. And they try to, like, and you've seen it, right? You've, yes, seen it. You've seen it here in Cleveland. You saw it on 60 Minutes in Chicago. Like, they do it in St. Louis. This happens in Buffalo. It happens all over the country, right? These people
What I'm trying to say is systemic change and protest that affects civic and civil change. You can't, the criminal element doesn't listen to that. You can't say, hey, we're going to march in the streets and you people that are involved in, oh, I just said you people, fucking A. Now I'm going to
do this. Listen. You're wrong. Because you can protest that. You can get out there in the streets and say, listen, join us in mass to fight against the people who are terrorizing.
But you can't affect an election or a civic change for it.
But Jim, like, here's the thing. Like, you got to come a little bit out of your shell and out of your bubble, because, like, there's multiple problems here, right?
Yes.
You have the fact that you have the systemic issues with police and law enforcement, but you also have the actual issues that we can't ignore that are happening in the inner cities, the violence, the drugs, and everything else, the neglect, the abuse, all of that. Like, that's real. We can't ignore it. It is what it is. It is absolutely real. And
Completely agree.
It's a problem. So yes. The thing is that people say, like, people think that these things are, like, can't be solved at the same time. So what I'm telling you is that actually criminality can be protested. Actually, criminality and that element that is ruining the lives of law-abiding citizens, there are citizens out there who are fighting it. And that is the perception that's the actual reality that doesn't get broadcast on the media, that doesn't get shown in the news, that doesn't get, you know, talked about on social, you know, media or in comment sections or on YouTube.
Or like MSNBC or anywhere.
Right? Yeah. Like, the reality is there are law-abiding citizens who are tired of being terrorized in their own neighborhoods who have no voice. They also have no support from the police. They have no support from their cities, from their mayors, from their delegates or representatives. Right? These people are fighting a war on their own, and they have no weapons, and they have no tools, and the only thing that they have is joining together and marching in the streets and hoping that someone sees them and says, hey, why are you marching? Okay, because you're marching and because I believe in your cause, I'm going to help you. That's all they have. So they do it. But yet they still don't get the help that they need. So that's a major, major part of this that is being ignored, right? Because those people are doing it in the streets, on the street level, in these neighborhoods. And no one hears them and no one cares, and people tell them to shut up and to stop and don't block traffic. So the NFL players are doing it. The NFL players are doing it and saying, all right, well, listen, I have a platform. I have a voice. That's my mom, 10 years ago when I was a young kid who was marching in those streets, and I was fortunate to make it to the NFL and get her out of there. But I still have friends and family members who live back there. So as an NFL player, I'm going to do what I can financially, but you know what? I'm going to protest. I'm going to do what my mom was doing in the streets and nobody was listening. And since someone's going to pay attention to me because I play a sport, then I'm going to bring it to everyone else's attention nationally.
All right, so you said a lot of things, and I agree with essentially all of them, and I hate agreeing with you all the time.
But one thing that bothers me that gets said all the time is, why are you protesting Colin Kaepernick, LeSean McCoy, Michael Bennett, whatever? You make all you're these rich. Millions of dollars. You're rich. Paid. All right. So let me say this. People protest or form strong opinions about abuse of animals all the time. Right? They'll say puppies, whatever, blah, blah, blah. If anyone ever said, hey, fill in the actor or actress's name here, why are you protesting against foie gras? You make all this money. Really give more a shit about goose livers than you do about human beings? I look like I pissed you off there.
No, I don't know what foie gras is.
Well, foie gras is when you stuff a goose's gullet with carbs so they get a fatty liver so they can make something that tastes good. And it does taste good. But anyway, my point is that animal rights things get protested all the time. High-level celebrities all the time get on these platforms, and no one says shit. But when we're talking about human beings getting treated worse, well, you, Colin Kaepernick, made millions of dollars. You should shut the fuck up. Really? Should you? Does making millions of dollars make you not an acceptable voice piece for human rights in America today?
Well, and
see where I'm going? If I'm saying it badly, tell me I'm saying it badly.
Right. Well, you lost me when we got the goose livers and foie gras and Hogwarts and everything else.
Hogwarts. I'm not going to go Harry Potter on you. You suck. You suck.
Listen, but I do get what you're saying.
Hogwarts. You sound Hogwarts.
It happens a lot where. I think
people say you have an economic advantage, so why should you complain? Here's why. Maybe you care about people. Just saying.
Well, I think it's funny because animal rights activists, they get a whole lot of leeway in their activism.
Right.
Right. And my thing with animal rights is animals are great. I have a dog.
I love your dog.
Right. I have a great dog with stinky farts.
Your Dora does.
Although
bad
farts are better. You know, yes, changed her food and threw in some tuna in there. And now she's back to normal. Her fur time is bad. But here's my thing. I will always be this guy. I'm gonna take the human life over the animal life. I get that
me too.
The animal lovers are gonna lose their mind over that. And I know plenty of people who will say, well, I like animals better than humans, and animals are so much better and they're innocent and blah 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 blah. Okay, great.
Right,
fine.
If that animal could, it would kill you and your family. Just
right, exactly.
I say that about deer all the time when I bow hunt. People are like, you can bow hunt? I'm like, yes, I can. And if that deer could, it would kill you and your family.
Well, I don't actually know that. I've said that many times. I only know of one person who's been attacked by a deer. She's actually been attacked by a deer more than once. It's kind of funny.
I don't know the story.
My buddy's wife, like, she was doing this outdoor running thing, and she's like, she got attacked by a deer. And she worked at a hospital, so her husband had to take her to work. And then they're like, what happened? She's like, I got attacked by a deer while I was running. And it was a mess, man.
Run faster.
Right. Like, she couldn't, man. Like, deer are good at running.
They are, in fact, good at running.
Sorry, Sunshine Bear. I told your story. I do call her Sunshine Bear, but that's a personal story. So I don't know about deer and their will or desire to kill humans. I'm not sure how we got there. But my whole thing is just that, like, you know, I'm sorry, I value human life more than animal life. I love my dog, but I would definitely save, you know, my daughter or a friend before I save my dog. And I would be sad that my dog was gone, but I value human life over...
I'm sorry, laughing.
She got fucking attacked by a deer. It's brutal. She sent us pictures, and I'm like, what the fuck happened to you? Like, I thought my buddy flipped. Like, she looked like she got beat up, and I thought my buddy flipped, and I was the pit of my stomach fell out because she looked like she got her ass beat. She's like, I got attacked by a deer on my morning run.
Deer are assholes, okay?
Right. I'm like, holy shit. I think there's some veracity to what you're saying because, I mean, she literally, she got her ass beat by a fucking deer. Right, like, I mean, it was awful. I still feel bad. It's a hilarious story. She tells it so great. I mean, because she lived it. She was there.
This has to happen on the show.
I'm just telling you. So I'm agreeing with you, right?
Yes,
if they could, deer would fucking kill us.
They will fuck you up.
They can't stand us, apparently.
They got brutal jabs, too.
Those hooves are fucking dangerous.
They are.
Fuck you, Bambi.
Bambi's a jerk.
Sorry about your mom. You're a fucking asshole.
Yes. Wow. This went south so fast. All right, so there are a few other things that came up this week that we really should talk about, just sticking to the tenor of our show. There was... I can't believe we don't want deer beating people up. There was a fire chief in the outskirts of Pittsburgh who called...
He called Mike Tomlin a no-good nigger.
Yes.
Because he kept the team in the locker room during the national anthem. I think everyone completely misread what the Steelers were doing. I think the whole point of in the Steelers situation is complicated by Andrew Villanueva. And yeah. Andrew Villanueva, and this is a hard, this is issues.
I wrote about this on our.
You did. And you did a good job, by the way.
Thank you.
Go to whiskeycongress.com and you can read it. Read all about it. But Andrew Villanueva of the Pittsburgh Steelers is a West Point graduate. And he did multiple tours in Iraq. Multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan covers it, but you feel like you need to cut me off and fill in, whatever. So he does multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think he got the Purple Heart. I know he saved a couple guys.
Distinguished career.
Distinguished war hero.
Yes.
Came back. And he was a tight end at West Point, or Army. He put on a bunch of weight, and now he's the left tackle of the Pittsburgh Steelers. This whole thing with the flag came up, and, you know, he's a West Point graduate. He's an Army vet. He's a legit war hero. His stance is clear and obvious, and, you know, I don't think there's a guy in the NFL who looks at him and says, you know, oh, well, he stood for the national anthem while the rest of us kneeled. Fuck him. I don't think there's a guy in the league who looks at Andrew Villanueva and says that. I understand that, the Steelers as a team made a decision to just not come out of the locker room and stay in the locker room and said, listen, we can't agree on what we're going to do. Stand, kneel, before, after. Let's just stay in the locker room. Let this blow over. And, you know, we'll be here together as a team, then we'll go out. By the way, if I'm Roger Goodell, as soon as this shit goes down with these flag protests, I'm telling every team that's what you're doing. Every team. I don't care. Because if you do that and you say, listen, new rule, I don't want anyone protesting. Everybody's in the locker room. You make the big announcement. You take the brunt of the storm as the commissioner of the NFL. Right? You do that. I guarantee you this blows over. And everybody is okay with it. But as soon as you let everyone go willy-nilly like this, this is what happens. I'm telling you, Roger Goodell could have quelled this at the beginning of this season and said, everyone in the locker room, every single one of you in the locker room, you want to stand, put your hand over your heart, wear a flag, you know, drape yourself in a flag and do whatever, you do it in the locker room, all teams back in the locker room. That's what I would have done, period. But Andrew Villanueva, as a war hero, when the Steelers decided to stay in the locker room, he comes out and, you know, he came to the edge of the tunnel, put his hand over his heart, helmet by his side, and he stood there. Makes perfect sense. Guy is a war hero. He graduated from West Point. He is fucking Captain America, period. Right? I mean, he's a giant human being. His actual war stories, right, that have been verified and proven as true, they're magnified by the fact that
The story about him and the translator that he helped bring to America and then met up with again
There's that story, but
there's
also the story. There was a guy laying in the middle of a field who was shot and wounded, and Villanueva managed to get back out in the field, save the guy, and bring him back to safety. Now, my issue with that is, Andrew Villanueva, no matter how much weight he put on to be an offensive tackle, is still a ginormous.
He's
6'8", and he probably
or
went
6'10", is what I heard. But nothing. I think he's that 2 inches matters. Whatever.
Right. I mean, he's between 6'8" and 6'10".
He's a huge man.
Right. And even like he's probably about 300 pounds now, but he was probably about 250. You know, as an Army Ranger, so he was still a giant target. So he somehow managed to like discreetly get into the field and save a person who was wounded and get him back to safety without getting shot himself. Or maybe he did get shot. I can't remember if he got a purple heart.
But he might have shot.
Either way,
he was risking himself.
Either way, he risked himself. He saved a person. Like,
his stories are amazing.
Fucking Captain America, yes. Right? I mean, and I mean that in the best fucking way possible. So. And it just like so for him to come out and stand, it makes perfect sense.
Yes,
makes perfect sense. I completely understand it. I think every one of his teammates stands by him, and I think a lot of his teammates felt guilty for not being there with him. Listen, me being me, and you know, like you know my whole story and situation, I would have been hard pressed because I guarantee you, like, there's no way he snuck out of the locker room and no one saw him because again, he's 6'8" and 300 fucking pounds, right? That guy doesn't just move. You know, in the shadows, right? And no one noticed. Like at the very least, you feel a breeze. So I would have been hard to let him go out there and stand by himself. Now, that being said, he didn't want to put people in an awkward situation, so he tried his best to sneak out to be there for it. And it's that important to him. And I completely understand it. I don't blame him. And I'd be torn because I think I probably would have gone out there if. All things being the same, but somehow I ended up on that Steeler team. All things being the same, I probably would have gone out there and stood next to him because to me, again, as an American, and that's all that I know, I don't have another flag to fall back on. I can't tell you what country from Africa I originate from. I can't tell you if my family has any sort of origins in the Caribbean or South America. The only flag that I know that I can wave is red, white, and blue, with 50 stars on it, and that guy who's a hero, who's a true American hero, and he goes out to stand for the national anthem, I don't know if I can let him do it by himself.
Well said. And I respect that. I do have a problem with the people who say, you know, he disrespected his team, or he one thing that came out, he said that he felt like he left his teammates down, and I was bad. I felt bad that he was put in that situation to even say that because
he wasn't. It just it's so, and I get it.
He's a team guy.
He is the team guy, right? Like
you're a Steelers guy, I'm a Bills guy. So the two guys that really showed their colors, sorry for the expression, in this were Villanueva and LeSean McCoy. So LeSean McCoy called President Obama. Called President Trump a jerk. And there were a bunch of articles saying LeSean McCoy insulted the president. And he called him a jerk, and he called him a jerk for what he said and did. And you and I have butted heads on this show about name calling, and we've kind of agreed to disagree on a lot of things. But LeSean McCoy dealt with an issue with law enforcement and whatever. 2 years ago that we talked about on our old show.
Mm-hmm.
And
in a club
over expensive champagne that we could talk about for a while. But anyway,
it's a weird story. Cause at the end of the day, why are there police partying next to NFL?
LeSean McCoy. Yeah.
Right. It's like you're a fucking cop. Anyway.
So my point is that LeSean McCoy got vilified, and Jim Kelly and LeSean McCoy had a big battle in the Buffalo sports media. And Jim Kelly originally came out and said, that LeSean McCoy should have done what he did. And then he backtracked big time. As you well know, I love Jim Kelly. He's my top five all-time favorite athletes. And when you think about what he did with overcoming cancer and everything, I love Jim Kelly. But I think Jim Kelly did a brave thing in backtracking and saying he waved his patriotic flag, and then he realized, oh, probably overstepped my bounds. I dealt with a discussion with a cousin of mine who asked me if on our show we would discuss the despicable acts of the NFL players over the anthem. And I said, oh, take a listen.
Well, so let me clear this up. Wait. If I'm wearing my commissioner of the NFL hat, then I'm A, not accepting the contract from the military to have the players come out on the field back in 2009. But let's just say I don't have that foresight and I do have them on the field and everything plays out the same. Whole thing happens with Colin Kaepernick. I see how that plays out. If I'm Roger Goodell watching, like, okay, so now I'm Roger Goodell. I've seen what happened with Colin Kaepernick, and there's a lot of buzz about it after the fact with him in the offseason, during the preseason, at the beginning of the season. As Roger Goodell, I'm sitting there and saying, you know what? Nipping this all in the bud. And I'm signing an order and saying all teams, all players in the locker room during the national anthem, circa 2009, coaches, assistant coaches, get your asses out on the sideline. You stand at attention with your hats on your side, and that is what we do going forward until we figure this shit out, which is never, right? That's what I do if I'm Roger Goodell. Because from a business strategic move, that makes sense. That saves you. That's the money-making move, right? That's the business aspect of it. That's the end of that. That's what you do, right? That's how I think about a lot of things in business, and just that's just how my mind works. From a socioeconomic, political sort of standpoint, are you asking me if I were an NFL player, what would I do? I would absolutely kneel. I would absolutely kneel.
Can we talk about why kneeling versus sitting is critical?
We can actually.
This is not getting enough press.
So we'll talk about why the kneeling is important, and we'll talk about the origins of why this is happening. Colin Kaepernick sat for two preseason games and a regular season game. And then Nate Boyer, who was in the military, who served in the armed forces, who did time in Iraq and Afghanistan, and ultimately ended up becoming an NFL long snapper, caught wind of the fact that Colin Kaepernick was sitting during the national anthem, and he wrote a pretty open letter to Colin Kaepernick saying, you're protesting the NFL, or you're protesting the national anthem and the flag, and as a serviceman, that hurts me. I don't understand it. It angers me. But that being said, I'm going to keep an open mind, because if you feel so strongly about an issue that you're going to sit for the national anthem, you're going to sit for the praise or the recognition of our flag, which is so integral to our freedom and so representative of what we as a country are about, then I need to understand what your issue is. So I'm going to have an open mind. I'm going to listen to why you're protesting. And while I don't agree with the way you're doing it, I'm willing to listen, and I'm hoping that one day things will get better so that you will feel comfortable enough to stand. And you'll feel the need, and you'll feel the pride that I feel, and you can stand next to me so I can stand right there with you. But I understand by me being a white person, and this is in the voice of Nate Boyer, I don't know what you're feeling. I can't imagine what you're experiencing. But I see enough to say there's an issue, there's a problem, and while I don't get it, I can understand the fact that you feel strongly enough about it that you're gonna not participate in our national anthem and not participate in, you know, showing respect to our flag. So in doing so, instead of sitting, please kneel. And the reason why you kneel is because whenever a soldier passes in battle, when his family is presented with the flag, the soldier that presents that flag to him takes a knee out of respect. So do me a favor and take a knee as opposed to sitting. Colin Kaepernick took that advice. And now he takes a knee. Well, he did take a knee, but he's not in the league.
Right.
And the rest of the players, they take a knee. No one sits. They take a knee.
Right.
Because the knee represents...
Respect the flag.
Respect the military. Respect for those who gave their lives. Respect for those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. Respect for those who maybe didn't, but do defend our rights and our freedom. I'm not going to sit. I'm not going to ignore it. I'm going to kneel. And while I kneel, please see what I'm doing and help me fix the problems that we have. That's what that represents. That's from Nate Boyer.
Right.
Right?
It's pretty fucking powerful to me.
I think it is pretty fucking powerful. I think it's very powerful. And if more people on the other side would at least take that stance where, listen, I don't agree with you and it frustrates me that you're doing what you're doing, but I see that there's a problem and that problem is so important to you that you're willing to do something and take the risk that you're taking, that I'm willing to listen to it. If more people actually thought like Nate Boyer, then we wouldn't be where we are right now.
And so...
But part of the problem is that it starts with the fucking commander-in-chief.
There's that. And then there's another, Steve. I saw that story about Nate Boyer, and I was, you know, like, okay, this is powerful. I didn't know if it's true. So I snoped it and looked into it. 100% true. 100% accurate. And so all the people who are so bent out of shape about what players are doing, what Colin Kaepernick did, please read that, know that, own that.
Well, that being said, we're going to fast forward to one other issue that's kind of stemmed from this whole protest thing, right? You have the fire chief in wherever the fuck, Pennsylvania.
Outside of Pittsburgh, yes.
And he, if you don't know this story, he came out on Facebook. He called Mike Tomlin a no good nigger. And the media came out and said, wait, what? Because he said it on Facebook. And then after he says, I'm going to call, he called Mike Tomlin a no good nigger. And then
the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin, the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, a no good nigger because Mike Tomlin kept the team in the locker room. And so he then, after he posts Mike Tomlin's a no good nigger, he then says, I said it. Right? With that extra emphasis on that syllable. Right? Like he puts the extra emphasis on it. And so the media catches wind of it because people complain like, hey, I think our fire chief might be a racist. Media catches wind of it. It goes viral. Everybody hears about it. I think I tweeted about it, and I might have said something about it on our website, whiskeycongress.com, at whiskeycongress on Twitter and Instagram. And so people are bashing the guy for being a racist. So he resigns. But he resigns and says, well, it's the media fault. It's the media's fault for making me seem like a racist and blowing this out of proportion based off of what I said. And then his explanation is, I said it because I was mad. So basically,
I exposed my true colors because I was
like
mad.
So I said it because I was mad, which means like if I say it while I'm mad, it means it's not true. And so everybody's like making this big deal about it because like I said some racist shit while I'm mad. So it's not that big of a deal. But I have to resign now because you guys are all assholes because I said some shit while I was mad. Right? Like it's that right there, that guy's whole thing is the reason why people talk about like white supremacy. The fact that instead of him just, he'd be better off coming out and just like, I can't fucking stand black people. Like that would, he would look better in the fucking media if he said that instead of, I'm not a racist. I just said it because I was.
I only said those things because
I only said those racist things because I was.
My actual mind.
Right. Like yeah. I only said those racist things because I was pissed. You know, it makes no fucking sense. And that's the thing that really upsets people because that sort of logic and that sort of mentality is used all the time. Now, this guy ended up resigning, but there have been plenty of people who have gotten away with saying or doing things just as blatant as this, blaming it on anger or not blaming it on anything and keeping their job. Right? I mean, there's a bevy of police officers who, you know, pull people over because they're black, who pull their guns because they're black, who shoot them because they're black, and then say, I was scared for my life, you know, because he was a black guy in a car, you know, and statistically, that sucks. So, you know, I killed him. And then they get put on administrative leave, they keep their jobs, and they're found not guilty, and then, you know, life moves on. So, you know, to that fire chief, former fire chief, I think he gets the Dick of the Week award.
I will not object to him winning the Dick of the Week award. I agree with what you said. I do want to change gears a bit, though, because we have an ongoing thing on the show
We have the ongoing Deathpool.
Deadpool!
The Trump administration Deadpool. And I was so bummed because I think I'm down like 4-1 in the Deadpool history.
Jim, you're not doing good.
I'm not. And when Tom Price did what he did on Tuesday, I wanted to reset the Deadpool. And before we could even talk about it on Thursday, he was gone.
He was done.
He was done. So yeah. Tom Price was like basically flaunting government privilege.
Now, he had the position of the Health and Human Services Secretary, yes. of the White House, of the administration. And he was essentially, he was chartering private jets to take these different trips, some personal, some work-related. But, I mean, he was using...
Blending the two.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's using taxpayer money to take private jets across the country and not getting...
Across the world.
Yeah, across the world and not getting it authorized by anybody. And, I mean, he left us with a pretty ridiculous bill that we, as taxpayers, you, me, anybody listening to this, if you pay your taxes and you're not an asshole, then you are paying for that guy to take private jets around the world. If you think Tom Price, the director of Health and Human Services, is worth private jets around the world, then okay, so be it. You're cool with that. I'm not. He's not. So he gets blasted and lambasted in the media. He fights it. He's very indignant about it. You know, Trump's supportive, and then he's not because he doesn't know. He's like, oh, well, what's wrong with that? Oh, people not like it? Are they blaming me? Well, never mind. I don't like it anymore. So Trump kind of wavers on it. Price, early in the week, says he's going to fight it, and it's ridiculous, and then he resigns. So I think with this, the main thing for us is that it resets our fucking Deadpool.
All right. Right,
because at the end of the day, who the fuck cares who the director of health and human services?
Here's what bothers me. I
tell him why you're mad, Jim. Tell him why you're mad.
I'm mad because
tell him why you're mad.
I'm down in the game, and I wanted this guy was like just teeing himself up. He was being such a jackass, and I want.
So this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna reset the Deadpool.
The Trump administration Deadpool, yep. Which by the way, it's now all over CNN. It's fun to watch. Almost the
it's unbelievable
the pictures.
We need
to find a way to like look into the history of presidential administrations.
Well, so I've looked into it some. We are somewhat in some unprecedented waters in terms of the amount of turnover. It's not the amount of turnover. It's the positions
the
that are
level of
of turnover that has happened in this administration is crazy because typically in a presidential administration, you're going to have a lot of turnover early because right. You have a lot of people that you give jobs to that are part of your campaign and they just don't work out. But it's typically lower level people that we as the general public never hear of. We have no idea who they are and what they do. Right. And so there's a lot of swapping out. But with Trump, I mean, it's his, you know, it's his chief strategist. It's
the spokesperson, his press secretary.
Yeah, the press secretary. It's Stephen Bannon. It's his
chief
minister
or
secretary of defense. All like so many people, like you can't even remember what position they had because things have flopped around. Right. I mean, and Scaramucci slid in there for a bit.
Mooch. I was looking at the other day. I'm like, Mooch less than 10 days.
Right. The guy was in there for 10. It's fucking nuts. So we're resetting the Deadpool, but now the Deadpool is very interesting because now a lot of the main players are out.
Captain Deadpool.
Right. I mean, so
I sang for a change. How about that? How do you like that?
I like it.
How about
I like
that?
I think we should do a little bit of harmony.
That would be awful. If I tried to do that, it would be horrible.
But so now we got to reset the Deadpool. It gets a lot more interesting now because there aren't so like there were a lot of glaring. There was a lot of low hanging fruit, I think, early. It's amazing that Kellyanne Conway is still there.
And Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions, your boy.
I mean,
who I called out on our site as Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions for your entertainment.
Beauregard. That's
Beauregard is so much fun. I had to look up his name.
That's a tricky one as
it
well.
It really is.
It's got a little, like, a Beauregard. French.
Beauregard. You know.
Anyway, so we're resetting the Deadpool. This is what we're going to do.
All right.
I'm going to let you go first.
Let me go first. Oh, you're deferring.
I'm deferring.
Oh, shit.
Who is the next to go?
Oh, boy.
The problem is we're running out of key names and key positions.
We are.
There's only a couple like that are, you know, a couple of originals left. Now, we could start to go through some people who've replaced people to see if they leave.
All right, so you know.
Because that's a wonder.
All right, so you know. My dream is for Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions to be gone. I think he's an evil son of a bitch, and I want that son of a bitch to be fired. And if that makes me offensive, whatever.
You got to wonder. I think the funny thing Sessions. Is, I think I thought that Sessions was a bad guy. But like with Trump in the White House, I have to wonder if Sessions is questioning how bad he is. He's like, wait, am I really this bad? Do I have it in me to be as big of a dick as I want to be? Maybe I don't. I feel like Sessions is questioning his dickishness.
I don't think he has to doubt his dickishness. I am going to go with, John Kelly. John Kelly?
Really?
Yes. All right. That's his name, right?
Yeah, no, the General John Kelly. Yeah, absolutely.
I think he is so frustrated that he might just say, fuck it. I want to be on the outside.
Okay. 10-1. Because
it's after midnight. Yes, go ahead. John Kelly is my Deadpool.
Jim,
he's gonna punt.
General
John Kelly.
John Kelly.
He's actually writing this down, yep. Which is a good thing because in the past we've had to revisit.
Right, we had to like re-listen to shows and hear my terrible voice and.
Yes, and so you, sir, what is your Deadpool?
So this is my deal. I'm sticking with my guy. I think it's still going to be Rex Tillerson.
That's a good choice, too. Tillerson is probably... That's a good call. I'm sticking with John Kelly. I think John Kelly is so frustrated, but Tillerson might just say... I think it's easier for Tillerson to say,
when you look
fuck
at,
it, give me the cable deal.
You look at the lack of support that the State Department has. You look at the mixed messages that Donald Trump sends, you look at the tweets that Donald Trump puts out, right? Like, can you, like, your Secretary of State, right, which is our top number one diplomat, ambassador, negotiator, representative, like, you're the person who represents the United States around the world communicating a message as Secretary of State. That's your job.
Brutal,
right? And so, you imagine sitting in a form? Can you imagine, like, right now? I don't know where Rex Tillerson was this morning, but let's say he was in France, right? He's in France, sitting there, you know, with I forget whoever just won the election in France, and they're having a conversation. Macron. Yeah, and so, and you know, the leader of France says, "Hey, your president just said that." Puerto Rico is, just basically kind of sitting there on the sidelines waiting for handouts and that they need to be more proactive in their own recovery. What's that all about? I mean, that's Puerto Rico. That's part of your own country, and he's being a dick to them. So you mean to tell me that he's going to be cool with us? I mean, he's literally being an asshole to essentially a state that's an island, like right off the coast of his own country. Yeah, but you guys are kind of like mostly white, so you don't have to worry about it as much. Like, how do you spin that if you're Rex Tillerson? Right? Like, I mean, you're sitting there, you think you're moving the needle, you think you're having a good conversation, and then someone says your president just said this, and can you like? I could never be in that situation because
you handle things so well, Steve.
I'm so bad. It's unbelievable. All right,
brother. Let's shut this down. Let's shut this down.
So just so we're clear, the Deadpool is reset.
Yes.
10-1-17
John Kelly versus Rex
Jim
Tillerson.
Says it's going to be General John Kelly. I'm saying it's going to be Rex Tillerson. Chances are we're both going to be wrong. This time it'll finally be Kellyanne Conway. Now, by the way, I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders might not be like.
That was on my list.
But
she seems so numb. She seems so.
She does. I mean, she just seems.
I'm
going like
to come here.
Edge.
I'm
going
to say things, and I think I can tell you that honey tastes just as good as Kentucky bourbon. And right, whatever. I have no idea what the fuck are you talking about. I have no fucking clue. No clue. That was bad.
Having a fucking senior moment.
I'm old. I'm older than.
Shut it down.
Oh, now it's you want to shut things down. All right. Steven, enjoy.
To save you.
Thank you. Thank you. Saving
what
myself.
Friends do.
Steve, good talking to you, man. I enjoy this a lot.
Friends don't let friends drink and talk.
Hey, you know what? Seriously, though, my mom was in town this weekend, and my mom literally jumped into your arms. She was so excited to meet you. She was like, you're the guy that talks to my son and doesn't think he's an idiot. Thank you.
I think your son's an idiot.
Yep.
But I love him. Your mom's great, and though.
On that note, we are out. Mom, love you. Paused.